Edgar Cayce, one of the most documented psychics of all time, a renowned mystic, and the father of holistic medicine, founded the ARE in 1931 to research and explore transpersonal subjects such as holistic health, ancient mysteries, personal spirituality, dreams and dream interpretation, intuition, philosophy and reincarnation, and meditation. Today, the ARE's mission is simply to help people change their lives for the better through the ideas and information found in the Edgar Cayce readings. The ARE strives to be the personal resource for self-exploration, spiritual growth, holistic health, and mindful living for individuals around the globe. The ARE also offers membership benefits and services, including a bi-monthly magazine titled Venture Inward, members' newsletters, books, CDs, and DVDs through the ARE catalog, conferences, international tours, a massage school, and ARE contacts around the world. ARE also maintains an affiliation with Atlantic University, which offers continuing education classes and a master's degree program in transpersonal studies. Visitors to Virginia Beach can enjoy the on-site health center and day spa and a fabulous metaphysical library. Visit www.edgarcayce.org or call 800-333-4499 to learn more about the ARE.
Now, the moment that I've waited for now is what I was created for now. I'm gonna let you know what I'm feeling. Feeling plain ecstatical. What? I might just float right up to the ceiling. The joy inside me, the smile you see, is for one reason alone. The time and place where I wanna be is holy hot damn, right where I
cute. Apparently I met Sanjay, and I know I'll remember when he tells me, because he's written a book that he says I was instrumental in, furthering the art of persistence. The name of it is Do Everything They Tell You Not to Do If You Want to Succeed. And this is interesting now, since we're going through this crisis on Wall Street and this bailout, which is a sham in my opinion and all that, that maybe we can use the chutzpah Sanjay Berman now, because this is really funny. So welcome, Sanjay.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a few years. It's been a few years since we've last spoken.
Now tell me how we met. So refresh my memory.
I stuck onto set. You were on the set of Used People, and you had just finished and were in your trailer, and I was able to locate which trailer you were in, got past security, knocked on your door as quickly as possible, and when you opened it, you had all these people in there, and I said, I really need to speak with you, and you you excused everybody, and it was just you and me. And we had a conversation about the fact that I wanted to be the next Spielberg, and you said, let me see what you've directed so far. And I said, I don't have anything. And then you said, well, let me see what you've acted in. And I said, I don't have an acted in anything. And you said, so you haven't acted, you haven't directed, you haven't written anything, but yet you want to be the next Spielberg. I don't know. And that night was also a parent-teacher meeting. I was in grade 10 at the time. And yeah. I was more afraid of that meeting than I was of what my teachers were saying about me. So at that point, I turned around and decided to start to do something with my life.
Well, did I give you any advice? Did I say, well, forget it, you haven't done anything, so don't even try? What did I do?
No, you said by your age, I had already done this, this, and this. So, you know, if you want to do something, then do it. Stop waiting around for people and don't come into my trailer asking me to give you a leg up when you haven't done anything to show you deserve one.
Oh,
so
did
I went
I
out
say
and
that?
I started to work.
Oh, my goodness. Well, for goodness sake, well, I find let's take your book like chapter by chapter, because your first chapter says, don't be afraid, but in parentheses, except of Shirley MacLaine. So
yes, yes. I really feel that you could put me over your knee and spank me pretty badly.
Well, I seem to be getting that reputation these days of being so outright direct, and sometimes I guess it borders on rude. Do you think so?
It's not rude. I think that people who are afraid of those who are direct are usually insecure and realize that there's a nerve that has been exposed. There's a difference uh-huh. between being rude and being direct. I think
yeah.
that if you were being rude, I don't think you would have the time to be direct.
So oh, that's
people should actually say, well,
analysis.
Thank you very much for being direct and taking the time to tell me.
Yeah, well, I find it does save a lot of time, and it also saves a lot of heartache and struggle.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, you quote this one Chinese proverb. I just love it. If you have a problem, no, if a problem has a solution, why worry about it? If your problem has no solution, why worry about it?
Yes, and it's something that I have to keep practicing every day.
Yeah. But what you're really doing an essay on is worry.
Yes.
And so worry, I guess, comes from fear. Is that right?
Worry comes from fear. Fear comes from unknown factors. And unknown factors come from insecurities. Those who have faith in themselves don't really fear anything. You know, back when you were in school, you had those who would study night and day, and those who would study but wouldn't, you know, live and breathe it, and they always got the best marks because they had the most faith in themselves, and they just allowed the energy to flow. Today, there are people that don't worry about money and have enough to live. They don't really worry about where it's coming from or how to get it. They just let it happen.
You know, it's interesting. I was hearing a study they talked about today on the radio about cramming and staying up and doing the caffeine number to stay awake to learn your stuff. And then others who don't, more or less the same analogy you're making.
Yes.
And they found that those who got a good night's sleep were much more adept at answering the questions, which led me to something that I think is fascinating. And that is, you know, when you sleep, you are in touch with the astral. You're in touch with that aspect of reality. When you don't sleep, you're out of touch with that. The word disaster, the etymology of the word disaster, comes from the Greek disestrato, torn asunder from the astral.
I didn't know that, but I do believe that sleep is very important and actually solves problems. As a hypnotherapist, I know that sleep will resolve your biggest issues without you even being aware of it.
You know, I agree with that. Are you a hypnotherapist?
I am.
Well, tell me something. What about these unconscious fears that we're not aware of that is bothering everybody's sleep pattern these days?
Well, I think that the unconscious fears that we're experiencing is more in tune with the energy that's being given to us and that we're sending back out. I think that there's a lot of fear-mongering going on around the world, and I think that the environmental changes are part and partial to it. But generally, deep inside, your brain does know it's going to be okay. It's more coming from the conscious state where we're very worried about where our lives are going and what's happening right now.
Well, maybe it's your brain that's worried, but your soul that knows it'll be okay.
That's a better way of phrasing it.
You know, you have a line, show me a lucky millionaire, and I'll show you a person who went broke three times before he or she hit it big. So that person is in touch with what it is to look at the fears and let them go. That's what you're really saying, huh?
Yes. That's correct.
And then you say, get out of your comfort zone. But yet you want us to be comfortable without fear.
Well, getting out of the comfort zone does get you out of the fear. If you were to do something that you're afraid of and realize that not only are you able to do it, but there was nothing to be afraid of, you've grown inside.
Mm-hmm.
You've grown physically, emotionally, and spiritually.
So you're saying that our comfort zone is fearful.
Yes.
That's fascinating, Sanjay. Comfort zone is attached to fear. My God, that's quite a statement.
Well, I truly believe it. And I believe that this time in our lives with the world being in chaos, I think it's proven more so now than ever.
You know, this is really fascinating because we've been so schooled and programmed to be afraid. If it's not one thing, it's another. And no one ever, well, from the time you're little, don't put your hand in the fire, you know?
Correct.
What would happen if we allowed the children to put their hands, and this is just an example,
right,
and get burned that way instead of fearing them, instead of making them fear?
You're letting them understand what the world is really made of. As a parent, you're trying to protect, but you can go into overprotection and actually stop your child from growing and experiencing the world as it really is versus the little box that you live it in.
Yeah. This is very interesting.
You know, we were talking about Spielberg earlier, and here's a great example of a person who never stopped dreaming. You know, it's like the realities of the world never really came into his head to this day. He still makes these imaginary worlds. Well, most 99% of the children out there, by the time they hit 12, 13, are exposed to so much stress and so many realities of the world that they stop dreaming and they stop seeing the possibilities of their lives.
Yeah.
And that stops them from experiencing growth and creating more fears.
You know, he always talks about, so many of his pictures are about fear. I mean, the Poltergeist and those three, many of his films are about how he confronts his fears. And from that point of view, he has a child's fear.
Yes.
He's talked about that. But
he never stopped dreaming. The fears that he takes on, he's still taking them on, whereas most of us sit in our fear factor and never allow ourselves to go out and experience it. Simple thing. You want to talk to someone you haven't talked to in a long time because it ended on bad terms. Well, pick up the phone and call the person. What's the most that's going to happen?
Unless you don't want them in your life anymore.
Well, if it was a situation where you're missing them and you do want them in your life, but you're too afraid to take that first step, most people will not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Huh. And you talk about insecurities and that we all have them. What do you mean, where do they come from? How do we, without therapy, remember where they come from?
The insecurities that you have come from your environment and your judgment. So if you have a certain judgment over a situation or a past memory or experience of something, you've created a conclusion towards that without actually experiencing it yourself. That creates the insecurity that keeps growing from there. It's not so important. I mean, if you were to go to therapy or you were to see a hypnotherapist or something like that, then you can deal with that. But what's most important is not to look at the behind you of why it's there, but look in front of you of how to deal with it. The best way to deal with it is to take it on, take the bull by the horns, and take the first step towards it. 99% of the time, it won't end up in death, so really you have nothing to lose by taking it on.
Well, that and the also to always fall back on your creativity, because everyone is creative in some way or other.
Yes. Yes, very much so. Actually, I was going to read the...
Tell me about some of these examples, how you sold your high school to Pepsi and got suspended, and what does all that mean?
Well, I was a child who hated being in a classroom and always looked for my exit out. And in my last year of school, I was the president of the student association. And I saw a gentleman come in with a suit and a Pepsi logo on an envelope, and I followed him to the principal's office. And he left the envelope there for the principal, which I took a look at. And when I realized that they wanted to put Pepsi machines in the school, I just thought that's a great opportunity. So I went about calling them and telling them that I had the right to negotiate the deal. And when they came in, I said to them that we wanted $1 per student, plus we wanted a Pizza Hut, plus we wanted the junior schools, plus we wanted the textbooks, advertisements on the walls. And they agreed, and it kept growing until it finally became a $1.2 million deal. And I got caught because the superintendent of the school district had to sign the contract. So once I sent it to him, he kind of looked at the whole thing, not sure what to make of this, and sent it to my principal, who then traced it back to me and called my parents in. And the only thing my father could say is, well, we told them never to do that. And so I found that kind of funny. They didn't. And I was suspended for it. And a week later, the next Board of Education over from us signed the deal, and it was headline news. Today, if you walk into a high school, you see Guess ads, you see Levi's ads, all of that. But back then, that was the first of its kind.
Product placement.
Yes.
Well, who would have gotten the million? Would that have been you?
No. That would have been the school.
I see. That is so fat. I mean, your parents' reactions were so Canadian. You are Canadian, correct? You sound like it.
I am Canadian. Do I sound like it?
Oh, yeah, I can always tell. I'm half Canadian, Sanjay.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, my mother was Canadian.
Wow. Where was she from?
Yeah, I was born in the States, but I visited. Mother was from Nova Scotia. She was from Wolfville, Nova Scotia.
Really?
So I have a streak of, how should I say, Canadian, you never know what they're thinking in me.
So did you shoot Anna Pugh
and move to Nova
Scotia?
Tell us about your exercise on creativity. Tell my listeners what that would be like.
The exercise on creativity. Well,
yeah.
To be creative.
You say you decide on a book or a magazine that you'd like to have, and then you get it without paying for it, and you cannot steal it. Tell us what that is.
So everybody has the ability to acquire anything, to get to anyone. You've heard the whole term of 6 degrees of separation. But what you have to do is let go of your fears, your judgment, and your ego, and then proceed forward in looking at what you have around you, not what you want, but what you have around you to be grateful for, that you can move that as a way of getting to the next step. So if you want a book or a magazine, or, you know, that's a very simplistic one. I can show you more advanced ones. But look around, you know, from a different perspective. Not so much when you ask someone from what you want. Ask from their point of view of why should they give it to you? What's in it for them? Our brains are wired for survival. So we always, every action, every thought, every emotion comes from survival. And
yeah.
So when you talk to someone from their point of view, they're more open to listening to you and more apt to giving it to you. There's a win-win solution there. So when you're looking for something or you want to go somewhere or access someone, start to look around your inner circle. There are people there. There are resources there that you can take advantage of in getting to your goal.
You are a walking textbook on capitalism.
Well, it's come in handy.
They should have listened to you on Wall Street. We wouldn't be in this mess.
I think that all needs to happen, though, you know. I got a letter from somebody who volunteers in Brazil. She goes to Brazil where there's children who are living in poverty, and she has a sponsor who provides laptops for them, and she goes there and spends the summer there. And she wrote me this past time saying, I'm in tears as I'm writing this. Why does there have to be so much poverty? Why does this, you know, have to happen when there's enough money in the world to help these people and end all of this around the world? And I said to her that it's imperative that we have suffering. It's imperative that we have children in poverty, and because that's how we know where our empathy and sympathy comes from. That's our compassion. If everybody lived an equal life and everyone lived a fantastic life, we would never need to be compassionate for anyone else. So it's an important balance for us to access that and feel something towards someone else besides ourselves.
Yeah, this is basically what the Buddhists say, that you choose this life of poverty if you've chosen that, and it's because you will be the instrument for developing someone else's compassion, hopefully.
Yes.
And that the choice of that dire existence is a very advanced decision. What do you think about that?
I totally agree, and being a Hindu, it's a very similar philosophy.
Oh, are you Hindu? Tell us about that.
Well, growing up Hindu, I mean, it didn't mean much when I was a child because I didn't understand it. It was more like a lecture to me every single time. But as mm-hmm. I grew up and got more involved in this world, I started to see more and more how lucky I am to be born a Hindu. Not that there's anything wrong with anyone else's religion, but that the Hindu religion is very easy to follow because it's very much like the Tibetan religion, which is more of a philosophy rather than rules. And there's
no, absolutely. And Buddha was a Hindu prince.
Yes. Yes, that's
yeah.
right. And so it's more based on karma. You know, and if you can follow that very simple rule of karma, then everything else sort of falls into place.
Why do you think it is so difficult for so many people to wrap their minds around what goes around comes around? Why do you think that's so hard?
Because people only believe it when it's convenient. See,
well, maybe they don't want to be responsible. Maybe they want excuses for not having to be responsible for their actions.
Well, that's
so therefore I won't believe it.
The most religious people I know sometimes carry out the most sinful deeds because they don't think.
Oh my God! Look at the religions of the world. Have you seen Bill Maher's new film, Religious?
No, I haven't seen it yet. No.
You have to see it, Sanjay. It's quite brilliant, and it was packed when I went to the theater. And of course, it's mostly people who think.
Yeah.
And he's talking about how religion has basically been responsible for more death and destruction than any other human activity.
You know, I totally agree with that statement, and I think a lot of people are starting to believe that. I think you're seeing the decline in formal religion and the rise in spirituality now.
Yeah, they somehow put spirituality and religion in the same corner,
yeah.
And it's not. It's
no, not at
so
all.
Different.
Yeah. Not at all.
Huh. Well, now, your little chapter on Step Up and Make It Happen. You've had quite an experience with famous folks that you've approached.
Yes, I have. Yes.
So you see somebody that you think will give you some advice. It's very interesting that you're not afraid to present yourself.
You know, I think that when it comes down to it, the only reason is because nobody is going to do it for you. I think that was the first lesson that I got when I met you.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is going to give you a leg up unless you prove to them that you're worth it. And, you know, most of the people that I've met, 99% of them are very nice, very giving, and want you to succeed.
Yes.
And I think what stops most people from approaching those that they want to is that they have the fantasy that these people won't care, or they'll sweep them aside or be rude to them or something like that, when they don't realize that these people are worked hard to get to where they are and want you to do the same.
And also we want to be contributive to the advancement of someone else. It makes us feel good.
I would believe that, yes.
Tell me, what is your opinion on all these films that I did in the last 3 years that I've done, and working with these young people, mostly young women, who never really asked me any questions at all? Why didn't they ask me any questions?
I looked at a picture of you and Misha Barton standing there. And, you know, it's like having a teacher on set that can teach you things that they don't teach actors today.
Right.
You know, coming from your era, you had to prove yourself on the stage.
Yes.
You had to prove yourself in musicals, places where you can't fake it. Today, if you're a good-looking model, you'll get a movie. And there
yes,
is
but
no
why
model.
Didn't they ask me any questions?
Well,
my trailer was always open. I was always accessible. Why didn't they bother me?
Because they're so caught up in their own fears of how they even got there that they never really worked their way there. You know, a lot of them were just models that got an opportunity to act, and now they're so afraid of losing that because they have nothing else to fall back on. They have no education. They have no other skills. They can't sing and dance. They don't know what else to do, and so they're caught up in their own fears that they don't take a second to look around at the opportunity that they have by accessing you, by accessing a director, by getting tips. You know, it's like if I ask you to carry a bowl of water around the block, but do not spill a drop. You will carry that bowl of water and make sure that nothing drops. But you would have missed out on the birds. You would have missed out on the boats. You would have missed out on, you know, the raccoon. You would have missed out on the kids playing. You would have missed all of that to focus on the water not spilling. So was it really worth it at the end of your little trip?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think that these kids are so afraid of not losing their place in Hollywood that they're trying not to spill a drop.
My goodness,
and they'll realize it later on. They will realize it later on.
And also they don't realize that it's that it hurts my feelings, that they don't access me.
Well, it shouldn't hurt your feelings because it's based on expectations that you're holding of them that they're not ready to live up to.
Uh-huh.
Because when someone is ready to approach you, they're going to approach you, and they're going to ask you questions that are going to be thought-provoking questions and that are going to make them grow genuinely.
Mm-hmm.
So why have someone approach you for the sake of approaching you when they could approach you because they genuinely want to? And you can't have that happen until they're ready to. How many young actors do you see that have seen Can-Can or that have studied Sinatra or, you know, any of these people that have had the skills, the real skills? Very few of them have seen those movies.
That's true. We're living in a modern age where no one had to work for it.
Yes.
Milton Berle was
on set of a TV show in Toronto before he died. And I said to him, one of the best movies ever was It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World. And he said, there will never be another movie like it. because you don't have the actors to pull it off.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's a big statement.
It is. And when you look at what makes an actor, I mean, I never had any acting lessons, Sanjay, but I'm a good actress. So what do? You learn acting by acting.
Yeah, but you also have had very few insecurities as to go on screen without any makeup with Meryl Streep and show yourself in a nightgown with your hair done up and gone on screen to do that. Very, very, very few young actresses today would allow themselves to be put on screen without any makeup.
Mm-hmm.
They can't handle it because they're not in character. They're an actor trying to be in character to stay in the position that they're in. There's a very
Also, everything mostly these days is about the outside, the pretense. How do you look? How do you dress?
Exactly.
It's not about the inner light of the talent or the human.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Tell us how you convinced three of the richest executives in Canada to finance your college film.
You know, I basically got a list every year. It's printed in the newspaper, the top paid people in Canada. And it's a list of 60 names. So I called all 60. And what I realized was the people making $10 million to $20 million a year had voicemail. And the people making $5 million to $8 million had secretaries. And the people making $300,000 to $8 million had voicemail. And so I would hit up all the voicemails until I got a call back from a secretary that said, there's a check waiting for you. I'm thinking you have to come and pick it up. And I went there, and I've never met any of these executives face-to-face to this day. They didn't want credit. They didn't want to thank you. They didn't want anything. It was almost like they were angels. They, you know, came down, they did their job, and then they left.
Wow. Well, you could have been making any kind of film that their money would have gone toward.
Yeah, it's unfortunate I was a terrible director at the time.
So you haven't met these people, and even now that you're a success, they don't know they gave to you.
No, I've actually tried to contact them a few times to say, you know, this is what I've become, this is what I want to show you, this is what I've done since then. They don't want it. They don't want any part of it. It was a good deed that will remain a good deed because they don't want any payback.
Well, is it that, or is it that, oh, we'll just pay the money, I don't want to have anything to do with the feeling?
No, because even Conrad Black and I share emails. I've asked him for advice on several issues, and he'll always send an email back. But you know, it could be that, it could be that they just said pay him and we want nothing. But why would they have paid me in the first place? What would have invoked that?
Were you tax benefit?
No.
You weren't tax deductible? I don't know,
no.
To make themselves feel better and yet not get involved, because that's what I'm finding. Very few people want the involvement, what it takes to be involved with another human being, because everybody's so busy, everybody's so at wit's end. How do you deal in a world when the only way they think you can survive is to not spend that much time thinking about anything?
You know something, I think that's the thought that you have when you first hear the voice on the phone saying, I really need help. And the second thought is, wow, look at how fast I'm working. Here, if I just cut a check, I can help somebody else out, and it's not going to take a lot of my time. So go
mm-hmm.
ahead, cut the check.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever way it comes, it is still from a form of sincerity and genuine help.
Yeah. You have a whole chapter on integrity and honesty have to be practiced every day.
I think that
is something that you've got
so
to
lacking.
Earn respect, but, huh?
I think that is something so lacking today.
Yes.
It
you have to, you can't expect respect, you have to earn it.
Yes. Respect is something that people seem to think that they are born with the privilege of, and that is not true. Respect has to be earned. And the first person you have to respect is yourself. If you can't respect yourself, you can't expect anyone else to respect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's why being blunt is the best way of keeping your self-respect.
Yeah.
You may have a reputation of being blunt, but nobody will ever say she has a reputation of talking behind someone's back.
Mm-hmm.
When they say you're blunt, it's from a form of respect.
Mm-hmm. God, I've had so many people lately, just because I finished playing Chanel, I guess, and they stop to me and say, you don't take any bullshit off of anybody. keep going, you know. Especially given how governments lie to us. But
yes.
It's a very fine line to be sensitive and to be to tell the truth without hurting someone's feelings. That is a real art.
Yeah, I think that if you're hurting someone's feelings, though, it is coming from a place, again, of fantasies. Their feelings are being hurt because they built an expectation of how they should be seen, and when they find out that they are not seen that way, they get hurt. Really, it's a figment of their imagination. What they should be saying is, thank you for pointing that out.
You know, my mother always would go the diplomatic route instead of telling exactly what she felt. And that's probably why I don't do it, because I never knew what she was really feeling.
That's,
you know,
exactly
that Canadian routine.
Yes, I
and
do.
So, and I would say, Mom, why do you go? Why do you err? It's practically not diplomacy, but lying. Why don't you just tell them? No, you mustn't hurt anyone's feelings. Now, you're saying it's because that person would be hurt. Clarify that.
Okay. The person that is doing it, like your mother, is doing it because she has built an expectation of needing to be liked, and doesn't want to be the one to put any holes in anything. The person receiving it who is getting hurt is only getting hurt because they had a fantasy of how they should be seen. I'm a very honest person. I'm a very loyal person. I'm a very religious person. These are all fantasies that they create that they want to be seen as. And when you destroy that fantasy, they drop down to reality, and that thump hurts. But really, the thump is reality hitting them in the head, saying, no, if you want to be seen like that, then that is not what you're doing right now. So if you make a change in yourself, you will be seen like that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, it does, and what I find in my senior years is they expect me to be blunt and honest, because otherwise, what have I learned?
Yes, we do look at our elders as saying, you know, teach us the ways of the world, and that goes back to, you've already made so many mistakes, so you know what not to do. Please tell us how.
Yeah,
and in Chinese
like
cultures,
to...
in Indian cultures, you know, they revere their elders.
Yeah.
You know, there are no, you know, old age homes or anything like that, because they want that wisdom brought into the household.
What are we going to do about that in this country, Sanjay? Because this is terrible, the way we treat our elders.
I think that the world is spinning so quickly, and it's all about making money, and it's all about not losing your place, that we forget about the people we love that are around us, and we only remember them when it's too late.
Or what they can do for us.
Exactly. But there is a positive to that, and the positive is that people are living a lot longer. In this world of chaos, people are finding a reason to keep living. You know,
well, it's that, and also the technology of medicine, et cetera. So the lives are longer, and that's why we hear so much about sickness, because they're living longer.
No, ma'am, I think that when you want to give up, you give up. I think that they could have the best people around you and the best medication, but when you lose the will to live, that will is taken and you are now brought into the next world. So yeah. I believe that people are living longer because they're actually fascinated by this earth. They're fascinated by what's changing, and they're surprised, and they're loving themselves more. So even though there's a lot of mess in the world, there's a lot of good things as well.
Yeah.
We just don't see it.
We're all in this soup together trying to figure it out.
That's exactly it.
You know, another thing that you make a big point of is whatever you're doing on your way to success and you're upset about something, don't burn the bridges unless it can't be helped. We should talk about that because so many people are doing that.
Well, especially in our field, you know, in the entertainment industry, you run into the same people over and over and over again. But the world has become so much smaller. You know, with Blackberries and things like that, it's not, you know, everybody has McDonald's. I mean, there isn't a country you can go to in the world now that you can't find what you can find in your own neighborhood. So with that being said, when you burn a bridge, you will be running into that person again, whether it be tomorrow, next month, or next year, you will run into them. So if you can avoid burning the bridge with them, then avoid it. But if you absolutely cannot, I mean, I've dealt with some agents and some directors in my time that I, you know, did not get along with and don't want to deal with. It was just too much stress unnecessarily. Then it can't be helped. You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. Well, now that brings us to yes men. Because if you're not going to burn a bridge and you're not going to really be honest about where your stand is, then do you turn into a butt kisser?
Hate yes men. I hate them. They
mm-hmm.
make me feel too good. It's almost like a drug that shouldn't be allowed. I think you raise a good point.
Sanjay, when you're picking your team, like you talk about,
yes,
how do you differentiate between the person who will tell you the truth and the person who is just so negative you can't have them around?
Because the person who's telling you the truth will say, no, you can't do it like this, but if you did this, then it can be a possibility.
Yeah.
I'm surrounded by people that will tell me, no, you can't do this, but come back with a different solution and let's see if we can make it work.
Mm-hmm.
You've got
to mostly you have to see and follow your own vision, your own, you know, be truthful to yourself and your own vision.
But your honest team will know that that is what you want to do and will help you get to your vision. They're not there for themselves because they know by being around you, they will get to their vision as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you can only attract an honest team if you lose your own insecurities and are willing to be told the truth. A lot of people say that they are willing to be told the truth, but the minute you're blunt with them, they can't deal with it.
Yeah.
So you have to be truthful to yourself to be able to attract that kind of a team.
Now, that is the most interesting and the most important thing of all that you said. You've got to be truthful to yourself. Then you can be compassionately truthful to another, and then everybody moves forward.
Correct. And it won't come out as being mean.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you were being very blunt with me, no matter how afraid I was or how bad I felt the rest of that evening, I never took it as you being mean to me or you not liking me. Not once. I can remember it distinctly.
Why didn't you feel that way?
I think I was raised by a very blunt mother, and my father was very diplomatic, but still would tell you the truth. He was very, very soft about it, though, but he would tell you the truth. And I just sort of liked that. I liked people being intimidated, because the only people that would be intimidated by that are those that can't handle it. So I always
mm-hmm.
watched for who was I intimidated by and would watch their mannerisms, watch their their verbiage. I would just study them to figure out why is it that people are so intimidated of this person. And it always came down to the fact that they were very truthful with themselves. And when you're very truthful with yourself, it's very different from what we're used to.
And the person, you're saying that the person who is truthful with themselves is the one who can be intimidated, or the opposite?
No, that can be intimidating.
Oh, yeah, I see. Uh-huh. Tell me the general and the prisoner story.
Well, you had a general that approached the prisoner and said to the prisoner, tomorrow you're going to face the firing squad, or you can walk out that door. And the prisoner said, well, what's out that door? And the general said, we don't know. Nobody's ever picked it. But I'll come back tomorrow morning and you'll make your decision. So he came back the next morning to see the prisoner. He said, well, it's time to make your decision. Prisoner said, I thought about it and I would rather go in front of the firing squad. Once the shots rang out, the general secretary said to him, what's out that door? And the general said, freedom. But nobody ever chooses it because they'd rather live in their known hell than their unknown heaven. And that's what we're talking about, the fear factor, the fear that people have within them, that they're so prepared to be living in fear because they know what that fear is, rather than experiencing their unknown heaven of getting out of that fear and really mm-hmm. realizing their possibilities. Mm-hmm. I would not have been able to produce a film at 23 years old, which won the Cannes Film Festival, which was nominated for an Oscar, if I had stuck within my fear zone of, I'm 23, what do I really know? Maybe this is a good script, but if it is a good script, then why didn't anybody else find it? You gotta take that risk. You gotta be prepared to look foolish.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's that great ending of the movie in See No Evil, Hear No Evil, Richard Pryor and Gene, the two of them used to always be in movies together.
Yeah.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. I can't remember it either.
Okay. Well, there's that one at the end of it.
Wilder.
Gene Wilder. Gene Wilder uh-huh. was always afraid to the whole movie of looking foolish because he was blind, and he hated the idea of people thinking that he was blind. So Richard Pryor, at the end of the movie, puts an ice cream cone on his head and says, well, do you feel foolish? He says, yes. And then he says, well, does anyone else care? And he said, no. And that was the end of the movie. It was like you were living in this fear of looking foolish your whole time, and really, nobody cared. They're so worried about themselves, and they're so caught up in their own lives that they don't have time to look at you and laugh.
So the humiliation is a self-imposed action.
That is correct.
Yeah.
It's another fantasy.
Another what?
It's another fantasy that you create in your head. People will
yeah.
laugh. People will think I'm stupid, you know, and it's so not that way.
Yeah. You know, the way you use visualization, visualizing what you want right down to the smallest little detail and the feeling of how it will be when you have what it was you're visualizing.
Right.
I find that to be, there's two ways to look at it. One, you're spending too much time with the visualization because under the visualization is the fear that it might not happen if you don't visualize.
Correct.
And the other is to just put it out there that that's what you want and then don't think about it anymore.
Correct.
Which works?
Well, I believe that the visualization that you put into your mind of exactly what you want to feel, exactly what you want to see, and then put it to the back of your mind, it will stay there and it will attract itself. It'll constantly
mm-hmm.
be working. You have to focus on your bigger vision and continue to work forward to that. I think if you keep that smaller vision in your head of that fantasy and keep it at the front of your head, you're building expectations for when it doesn't happen tomorrow, you get disappointed by it and then give up on it.
Yeah, you know what I do, Sanjay? I visualize what I want, three times, one for mind, one for body, and one for spirit.
Perfect.
Really, really equally visualize it those three in those three ways, and then let it go.
And then it happens. It happens on its own time when you're ready for it.
Throw it up to the universe.
Exactly. You know, a perfect example, I'm just thinking about it now as I'm talking to you, a perfect example of somebody not being afraid to look foolish was when you were preaching spirituality back in the 70s and the 60s, and people were making fun of it, and you were the joke at the Oscars, and, you know, oh, she's had so many lives, and which life is she in now? You're the last one to laugh, because this is what everyone is talking about now, and people have come to the idea that this stuff is real.
Mm-hmm.
But it wouldn't have happened had you been afraid to talk about it back then, thinking, you know what, I'm an actress and maybe I'll stop working if people started to find out that these are my beliefs. Maybe I should just keep it to myself. See, that was a risk that you took that actually paid off.
You know, it's funny. I never looked at it as a risk. I never saw I saw some of the laughter as being quite funny. You know, the talk show hosts, because they were usually pretty good jokes. The only thing that bothered me was if the jokes weren't funny.
Yes.
But I don't know why. I don't consider it courage because I wasn't afraid. You know, courage I would define as doing that which you're afraid of or something. But it's just to me very real, and therefore I'm expressing what I feel is real.
I have interviewed 20 people that have made changes in their lives and taken risks that have altered their life, and none of them considered what they were doing a risk. Not one person, because you're so involved in trying to achieve what it is you're trying to achieve that you don't realize the risks that are involved. If you did, you wouldn't do it. So it's almost like your brain automatically tunes it out so that you can continue on your journey.
Well, and when you are really wedded to what it is you want to have happen, you're exuding a positive energy, and everything about you feels good and positive. I mean, the clothes you choose to wear, the places you choose to go, the jokes you laugh at, the stories you tell, you know.
Correct.
And that positive energy perpetuates itself, don't you think?
Absolutely, without a doubt.
You know, it's funny, when I go into somebody's house, I'm a perfect stranger to them, and even before I was famous and all that, I would go in, and immediately, if the kitchen was near, I'd look in the ice box, I'd look around, I'd go in the bedroom. I wanted to know what these people were really like. And most of them didn't object. They thought it was sort of like they were being, I cared. It was that I cared about who they were and what they did.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's not coming from a place of judgment. It is coming from a place of sincerity. And when
curiosity.
Humans feel sincerity, they can't help but fall in love with it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious. It's like when a kid walks in your house, they'll do exactly the same thing.
Yes. Yes, very much so.
Overturn everything to see what's underneath.
That's exactly it. And it's a great thing.
You know, it's this business of not being afraid of influential people. People don't realize, I mean, it's back to them not asking me questions on the film set, but most people want to help. And want that influential people love teaching others.
And so
someone who is trying to make it should not be afraid of asking questions.
You know, I think the ones who do make it are the ones who ask the most questions.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're the ones who wanted to know. I when my first trip to Los Angeles, I had maxed out my credit cards. I was 18 years old. I was going to go there. I was going to make it rich and famous, and that was it. And I visited the head of programming for the Family Channel, which is a kind of a Disney channel here. And I said to him, so who should I see and what should I pitch? And he said, you know, I think you should go and take these meetings that you have with, and I had meetings with Ron Howard and people like that. He says, I wouldn't pitch anything. I think I would just go and ask them, what is it that you do and how is it that you work, and tell me what it is you want. And they will share with you more time and more information based on you not going in with any expectations, but you genuinely wanting to know about them. And you know something? I still use that technique today, where I will take a meeting with someone with nothing in my hand, just wanting to learn more about them. And that is exactly what happens. They will share with you information that nobody else will.
Yeah, because you're not putting them on the spot.
You're not putting them on the spot, and you're not being like everybody else.
I mean, what I mean by that, you're putting them on, you'll ask them questions, how do you work, spot, but they know that very well. For you to go in and pitch something, they're on the spot, how should they react?
That is correct. And this will work in any market, whether you want to be a lawyer, a doctor, a businessman, whatever it may be, find the person that you want to be like. Go in and talk to them, and I guarantee that if they're not too busy and they can afford the time, they will spend it with you.
I think you're right, Sanjay. I love your thing that your advice, never leave a gathering or a party or someplace without at least 5 new business cards.
Yes. Yes. I think that gets you out of your fear zone. I think that I do it only for people that are living in fear, that are not sure of how to network themselves. I think it's important to go into a party to get 5 business cards, and it may be of people that have nothing to do with that party or nothing to do with what you want, but it gets you in the habit of sending that energy out.
Mm-hmm. And also, if you can fix it so these people, it's their idea to give you their card.
Yes.
So that they want to talk to you further.
That is correct.
Yeah.
If there's someone that I get a bad feeling from, I will never give them my card. I'll always say, well, I'm out of cards. Can I have your information?
Mm-hmm.
So people who are giving you business cards are doing so because they do want to hear from you.
Mm-hmm. Do you think most people are frightened of success?
Yes. I deal with it every day as a hypnotherapist.
So they think they're afraid they can't deliver?
Yeah, it's that exact thing. It's about being with the young actress who doesn't ask you anything, who stays in her trailer, who might go out and party all night long, come back on set, and can't function properly, all because they're so caught up in the idea of, I can't believe I'm this far. How would I ever deal with going any further than that? I think there's a lot of self-sabotage that takes place in the world. But, you know, now that the paparazzi is bigger than ever, you can see it in a lot of celebrities. They will do things to themselves that will kill their entire future when they've got it made.
Yeah, just so they won't be recognized, yeah.
Just so they won't be recognized.
Or they will melt down in public because they never thought they deserved it in the first place.
That's exactly it. Now, why would they think that? They would think that only because they're afraid of what their true potential is.
Yeah, I think everyone suffers from that. I think that success is much more difficult to handle than failure, because it's what we were talking about at the beginning here, and that is the comfort zone is fear.
That's exactly it.
The comfort zone is not ease with success.
Yes. I also talk about the old man and the dog. And that there's an old man rocking in a chair, and there's these two guys talking in front of the porch, and they keep hearing this dog crying. So finally, when their conversation is over, one of the guys turns to the old man and says, do you hear that sound of a dog crying? And the old man said, yeah, it's my dog lying here who's crying. And he said, well, why is he crying? And the old man says, because his tail is under my rocking chair. And the guy says, well, why doesn't he walk away, or why doesn't he move the tail? Old man looks at him, shrugs, and says, well, I guess it doesn't hurt enough. You know, it's better to be in pain than to move.
Well, except that the old man should have moved his chair.
According to PETA.
Mm-hmm. Man, I can't imagine not moving. I'm having terrible troubles with animal cruelty these days. It's just, I can't look at it, can't watch it, will walk away. Woof.
I think, you know, something I really have a hard time dealing with it as well, especially the visuals that they give you. I think a lot of it is due to so much resentment inside based on what's happening outside that we have no control over. You know, troops being sent, war started, oil, fights over oil. I mean, the world is in chaos, and we feel powerless. And so who do we take it out on?
What bothers me about it is that, you know, people so much of the time bring it on themselves. Animals in nature are harmless. They don't harm anything, and we're so cruel to those that don't harm.
It's an arrogance that humans have.
Yeah.
You know, we cut down more trees and build more houses and more condos, but what happens to the wildlife that's being kicked out of their home? Where did it go?
Yes. Well, Sanjay, this has been fabulous. Let me just kind of, let me see if I've heard you right. Most people are afraid of success, so you're not alone, but get over it. You deserve it. Jump into life, the one you want to live, and do it right now. Be good maybe to keep a journal on your fears. Every day write down what you did that day that scared you.
Correct.
And what were the results and why were you scared in the first place? How am I doing?
That's exactly it.
Well, good luck to you, Sanjay. This is just wonderful. I got the biggest kick out of this.
Thank you so much.
Do everything they tell you. Huh?
Thank you so much for your time.
Okay, so maybe we'll meet again.
I hope so.
Much, much love. And remember out there, if you have a problem and it has a solution, why worry about it? If your problem has no solution, why worry about it?
Exactly.
Okay, Sanjay, much love. Bye-bye.
You too. Take care.
In the Health and Wellness Center tonight, go really deep inside yourself and ask, is it true that your comfort zone is fear? Would you rather go with fear or